Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting extravaganza of an episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and incredibly crazy scumbaggery, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Quite assuredly, and I think this is kind of one of those universal truths that everybody best take a bite of that sandwich, because for goodness sake, what is the hell is the point of going through life without being good-humoured about it? All right? It's just the end of the world, people. Just harden up. Take it like a man. Or a woman. My very special guest today is Shane Warbrook. That's Warbrook with an E on the end. Shane, welcome.
Hello.
Can you give us a little bit of a breakdown about who it is you are and what it is you do?
I've been in the news a little bit lately. I was doing some research for a documentary, and I was sending away some official information at requests, which is reasonably tedious, as I'm sure everyone can imagine. And in the middle of it, I sent one away as a bit of a joke to the office of our Prime Minister, who, to be honest, I'm not a big fan of, asking if he was an evil reptilian alien sent to basically ruin our lives. And his office couldn't prove that he wasn't, or didn't have anything to say that he wasn't. And it seems to have been gone fairly far and wide from there.
Are you telling me that they can't prove that he's not some kind of shape-shifting reptilian designed to infiltrate humanity and enslave and eventually exterminate the human race?
Apparently not. I would have thought it would have been an easy request to fulfill, even just by sending a letter saying, no, he's not. That's our documentation.
Yeah. Or a letter saying, bro, don't send us joke official information act requests. Come on, we're busy people here. It takes us, you know, there's government expenditure at the hour's work here. What are you wasting our time for?
Yeah, pretty much. But no, apparently, officially, no document exists.
Now, maybe it's the cynical person within me that would assume that an intelligent person receiving an Official Information Act request, the likes of which you sent them, would instantly disregard it. A moron bureaucrat, on the other hand, who is incapable of thought, only capable of following standard operating procedure, would not. Would you agree?
To a degree. I mean, there's the fact that they are legally obligated to respond, so they have to send me something back. What they sent back, however, could have probably been a bit different.
I mean, what was your expectation at the time?
Well, I mean, it could have even been what they sent, but they didn't need to. It didn't require 20 working days to do.
Yeah.
Two minutes of a form letter, you know?
Yeah. Well, what does it matter then, eh? A big hubbub about nothing, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
That's New Zealand media for you, isn't it, bro?
Well, yeah.
There's plenty of important stuff that they don't cover, but plenty of meaningless, like, trivial kind of, I don't know, I guess it just sounds zany, so therefore they make it a story. What do you reckon?
Yeah, a lot of the people who have been reporting on it don't seem to have picked up on the fact that it was satirical, which I guess has exposed maybe a conspiracy to not teach critical thinking in journalism classes more than anything else.
Well, they do teach them critical thinking, but it's not what you think it is. What they do is they actually teach them to be critical of people who can still think.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds about right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In fact, I was just thinking about the suppression of the possible ideas. You know, there's I mean, look, how big is the world? How much knowledge is contained in it? And how much new knowledge is being discovered every single day? So how could anybody, if, you know, you lay a claim down or anything like that, instantly dismiss it offhand? And refuse to look at any evidence. Just because you know, without looking at it, of course, that it's nuts. UFOs, for example. You see so many references in films about these crazy UFO desert folk. You know, and sure enough, you know, there's eccentricity in all people. But it doesn't change the fact that there's a heck of a lot of very unexplained phenomenon in regard to unidentified flying objects. Documented stuff. Lots of it. If it were all a hoax, that would be freaking, like, astronomically unlikely. And as I understand it, you actually filed a number of other Official Information Act requests, and I'd like to know what the questions of those were.
Sure thing. They were basically just asking various government departments who seem to be in reasonable position whether what information they had about unidentified flying objects, extraterrestrials, just broad and open-ended, with the idea of basically a whole bunch of people are experiencing something. What that is where I'm not the person to decide what that is. I'm just looking to see what they've experienced, basically. I'm not going to decide for them whether that's an extraterrestrial encounter, something psychological, something else. It could be anything. That's a bit that no one can confidently say no. I think it's a little bit intellectually dishonest either way to say, well, that is definitely not this, just as it is to say it definitely is something else. We don't know. They've experienced what they've experienced, and that's all the facts that there are. This person has experienced something that's happened to them.
That's and my three favourite words, bro. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it gets you off the hook so many times.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to plant your feet in the ground on an idea that you don't yet understand, but you have to think that you do because, oh, being wrong is a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, it's just about that I don't have all the facts, really. No one does. And that's the whole point, is to try and find out, try and learn more about something that's happening.
See, I've interviewed quite a number of very high-profile UFO activists and speakers and documentary filmmakers and all of this kind of jam. And what's interesting is that a lot of their stories are about completely different people, right? However, all of those stories from all of those completely different people have all of these parallels, like these exact same kind of phenomena that are being taken up, you know, and all these people who are talking about being abducted, actually many of them have the exact same abduction story. And we're talking about people who don't know each other, people who live thousands of miles away from each other, In different parts of the United States at different times of the year and all over the place, and then coming up with the exact same kind of abduction story. See, that makes my ears prick up, and I'm like, whoa, you actually see a lot of common threads here. And it occurs to me that if there are common threads, then there must be something to it. What exactly it is, I don't know. because I heard anything from giant freaking insect bug kind of scary things that you see out of Starship Troopers to these tall, blonde, really beautiful kind of people who live like 5,000 years or some crap, you know, virtually the elves off Lord of the Rings. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's basically the same standing as I have, except maybe, well, I don't know. From what we're saying is that I'm not willing to assume, based on the facts that I have, it's one thing or another, beyond the fact that these events have happened to people. I mean, the UFO phenomenon is pretty much the great mythology of our age, and I don't mean mythology disrespectfully. I just mean it's a group of experiences that follow a similar pattern.
Yeah, it's a shared experience kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I think that's part of the reason why there is an actual UFO community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did this happen to you? Did you see something when you were younger?
Not particularly. I mean, I've literally seen unidentified flying objects, and that I've seen something in the sky that I can't identify. But what that may be is a whole other kettle of fish, you know. That's what I don't know. It could have been a plane, could have been anything. Being a kid, you don't know. I'm not going to say I haven't seen an object in the sky, and, you know, every single time I've looked at the sky, I've known what everything is. In terms of whether I'm confident I've seen a spaceship or something, then no.
No. Well, what prompted you then to go down this this line of research? Why the compulsion?
It's just
when did it begin?
Oh, a long time ago. I mean, I guess as a teen in the 90s, it was a big part. I guess it's that cultural mythology of our age thing really comes into play, where it was such a big part of popular culture at the time. I mean, you had there's the obvious stuff like the X-Files, but there's other films, Fire in the Sky. You had the books by Whitley Strieber. Just a huge body of work throughout all popular culture in my formative years. And I guess that's left an impression where I just find the subject very, very interesting.
Well, what's some of the most interesting things that you've found out or at least heard so far?
Oh, just... Well, to be honest, this is the beginning of my research, so not too much likely. But just the kind of... There's kind of a perception filter on the encounters as you go through time. So if you look at something from the turn of the century, well, the turn of last century now, isn't it? The kind of things that they're describing, seeing like there was a big airship scare in New Zealand in 1909 where people saw zeppelins that shouldn't have been there. And it kind of seems to follow the mores of the time, the sightings, with it while still having similar details. There's a large amount of variance for the culture of the time that it's happening in, and I find that quite interesting.
What is it that you find interesting about that? What does that say to you?
It says that the experience, whatever it may be, is it's heavily influenced by the culture that it appears in and the culture of the time that it appears in, but while maintaining some basic facts. So there's something that's happening that's continuous but is affected by our perception of it.
Kind of like when a car accident happens, you'll get four different witnesses who all saw the same car accident, but they'll remember a different colour.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
But on a cultural level, like, for example, a shaman would interpret a chariot of fire or something.
Exactly, yeah.
So let's think about this for a second. Let's go off on the hypothesis, shall we? You know, shall we?
Sure thing.
All right, okay. So I've heard things about ancient aliens. Okay, in fact, there's an entire series that you can download called Ancient Aliens. About old school stuff that's been there for freaking thousands of years. What was the carvings of Pakal-Katan in the Aztec culture or whatever it was in South America with breathing apparatuses up his nose? And he seems to be riding a jet bike like right out of Star Wars, and the freaking thing's thousands upon thousands of years old. You know, found gold statues of what are they called? Jet planes and things like that with that really distinctive tail wing. Now, something tells me that we used to have, way, way back in the day, a comparable level of technology to that which we have today.
Right.
But it all got wiped out. Great flood, allegedly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And most of that knowledge was lost, including the knowledge of where the frack our entire species came from.
Right.
You know. And many people have postulated through a lot of the things in mythology that there was a race of reptilian beings that came down here and saw the local hominid cultures, genetically engineered them with part of their own DNA, part of the hominid DNA, and created man, hence the missing link, allegedly. You know, this is just the stories that some people are saying. And in fact, old African culture. What was his name? Credo Mutwa. Have you ever heard of this guy?
No, I haven't.
Oh, dude. He's like a African shaman, bro. He's like the last of a real, real long line, you know what I'm saying? And right. Passed down oral tradition. And their story of creation was that human beings had no vocal cords. There was no men nor women. And everybody communicated psychically. And they would walk around and, you know, give their nice culture and what have you. And then these visitors came down. And they lit up two caves. And everybody was like, whoa, 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 what the hell is going down? You know, big ships and what have you. And big lights came up outside of these two caves. One was lit in red and one was lit in green. And these visitors told everybody that they had to pick a cave. And they're like, all right. So half of them go in one cave, half of them go in the other. And then they come back out. And they started speaking all these different languages. They suddenly had mouths and vocal cords and all of this kind of thing. And they were very distinct. Men came out of one, women came out of the other. And they all looked different. All these different cultures and things. And because they'd never had any of this sexes and languages and everything before, a whole lot of fights started breaking out. People mm-hmm. were sleeping with each other's missuses and whatnot. And, you know, old African legend, of course. And they went their separate ways and they went out and colonized the earth. It's like a 10,000-year-old story of creation kind of thing. I found that really fascinating to hear. And goodness knows what else is out there.
Well, I mean, there's a whole bunch of creation myths. No one was there. It's pretty hard to dispute any of them, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, then again, the onus of proof is on the person making the claim, not the person denying it.
To a degree, I think that's I mean, I know that's the accepted practice, but I think that deciding which is the assertive claim and which is the denial is a bit on the nose, a bit to the advantage of whoever's asking the question, and not really necessary. It's just as easy to look at saying, well, no, as an assertive statement that demands proof as well.
You know, you've actually struck on a very important point here, because what we're talking about really is information that changes the current perception of reality, the status quo, as it were. And I think the people that are trying to change the status quo have just as much a call to give evidence for their case as the people who want to maintain the status quo. Just denying that you've got anything of value, I don't think is enough. You also need to justify your position of denial, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's basic scientific theory. I mean, any scientific theorem is based on the best information at hand, and it's always open to be challenged and always open to be interpreted when new information comes to light.
Something changed. And I think the education system has changed. quite significantly. And as you were pointing out there earlier on in the piece about teaching critical thinking to people, there used to be a practice called, what was it, the trivium and quadrivium, grammar, logic, and something else, I forget. Anyway, it tells you about logical fallacies, you know, so you don't just, you're not just lying to everybody and yourself by using false arguments and whatnot. I thought that was pretty straightforward. And how to determine the who, what, when, where, why, and how, which is, incidentally, the questions journalists are supposed to ask before they do their freaking reporting. You know, have you noticed this? It's like I was talking to a friend of mine the other night, and he works on construction sites, Shane, and and I asked him, bro, do any of those boys, those new boys that are coming into the construction site, do any of them know how to do basic math? He's like, nah, mate, not at all. You know, he didn't even hesitate.
Right.
Yeah. 2 + 2 is a challenge for him, you know? And I was just thinking, oh, dear God. Basic thinking is not there. It's almost disappearing, you know? Like, have you ever seen the film Idiocracy?
Yeah, I have.
It's kind of like that. Intelligence, not just intelligent people, but intelligence in and of itself, is slowly becoming extinct.
Yeah, the basic tools are not reinforced enough to let people go out and do the rest. If you have the basic tools, then you can build the rest yourself if you need to. But yeah, it does seem to be disappearing a little bit.
Well, what would you say if there was, like, I don't know, some kind of military uprising or coup in New Zealand, as they were training for an Operation Catapult last year, biggest movement of US troops in the soil since like the World War II kind of thing, and which side would you fight on? Who would be the dictator of your choice?
I have to admit, it's not a thought experiment I've done. But I guess then all of that depends on the actual reason for the uprising, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it would. But I don't know about you, but I'm not in favour of any kind of military uprising. I don't think that's a very good idea at all. You know, like, oh yeah, let's put the people that have guns when we don't in control.
Yeah, no. Historically, it hasn't worked very well internationally, has it?
Yeah.
With one exception, to be fair, from my understanding anyway, to a degree, has been Egypt, where they seem to be at the very least paying lip service to caring about the population and putting them back in power, which is pretty rare for them even to acknowledge that could be a thing that happens when they take power as a military.
And to kick out the allegedly CIA-funded and founded frickin' Muslim Brotherhood from power.
Yeah.
So, we don't want US dictator Mohammed Mossadegh. And it goes, okay, well, we'll put in a group of US dictators, all right? No!
So I guess if the Egyptian military were to stage a coup in New Zealand, although I guess that's not technically a coup, it's just an invasion, but I'd at least consider their point of view.
Well, I remember there was actually an Australian ad about New Zealand. Like, we've got this international tourist attraction, kind of like 100% pure New Zealand. And the Aussies did it, and they noted that we don't have an air force. We don't really have much of an army. We've got, like, two ships. 100% ripe for the taking.
Yeah.
And then I hear just recently, I don't know, actually somebody told me this last year, Baxi, I think was his name, of course, his name was Baxi, and he was telling me about how they're now, or were at the time, dredging the harbour of Auckland to allow bigger ships to come through. And I was like, well, hold on a second, bro, you mean we've got these giant frickin' container ships and the world's largest cruise ships that are able to get in there now, and yet they're dredging the harbour to let something bigger in? What's bigger than the world's largest cruise liners? Aircraft carriers. And then John Key signs us up to NATO over the weekend, like in April of last year or something like that. He just like comes back and is like, yeah, we're part of NATO now. Whoa, hold on a second. South Pacific Island Nation, New Zealand is now part of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization? Yeah, that's right. You mean the World Army? He's like, yeah, that's right. You mean they get to now send our troops wherever they want? Yeah, that's right. Don't we really want that seat on the Security Council enough to give up our sovereignty to do it, huh? And also, he also gives permission, I think, within a month of that, or it might have been a month before, it gives the U.S. Coast Guard authority to patrol and police our waters.
Right.
And I was like, this all happened inside of a month, and I was freaking out. You know, it's amazing how terrifying reality can be when you actually pay freaking attention.
Yeah.
It can get pretty dicey.
Yeah. And I guess that's why everyone always looks for a pattern and for something easier to blame than the fact that it could just be actually people doing stuff like that.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of which, have you looked into the idea that a lot of these UFO sightings are actually just classified military aircraft?
And I believe it. Even if we go back to when we were talking before about the popular culture of the time, if you look during the 90s, there was a massive increase in triangular UFOs, which had never really been a big part of it before. It was a big thing on the X-Files, for example. Just all of a sudden, it was accepted that there were triangular UFOs. That was a thing. And of course, now we've got there's the F-117, the stealth fighter, and the B-2, the stealth bomber, are both, when viewed from below, basically the same shape as these triangular UFOs that were presented in popular culture at the time.
Yeah, that's true. I've also seen like a number of real messed up looking videos on YouTube, with these. It looked like a triangular UFO. It's kind of like it was hovering over the city. They were like shooting it through the buildings from the roof of one of them, kind of thing. And it just hovered there for a bit, and it had like plenty of lights on and what have you. And then it just kind of like started to glow and just went, it was gone. You know. And man, that stuff's buzzy. I've interviewed a number of people who reckon that they've worked at like Area 51, and or maybe not there. I don't recall specifically who was telling me this, but there's plenty of people who claim that aliens have given humans technology, like we broke it a deal or something. Apparently, Eisenhower did it, and now they're filtering out all of this tech, you know, fiber optics and whatnot through to the population. Apparently, they've got, like, real advanced stuff down in there. I wonder, and wouldn't it be cool if they did have, like, a whole bunch of real advanced stuff, like the kind of things that you see in the movies that you think can't be real, but actually, you know, Hollywood people aren't that creative. They have to steal their ideas from somebody because they're a bunch of ruthless, criminal, sociopathic scum.
Right.
Did I say that too loud?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's always been a big thing, particularly with Hollywood productions, that if you want access to US military hardware, and this is just a fact, this is the nature of the contracts, and it's public knowledge, that's how, you know, open it is that if you want to use US military hardware in your production, then the US military gets to go at your script, gets to go at your final edit, and gets to decide how they're portrayed.
I think Michael Bay, in fact, has a really good reputation with portraying the military really, really well. And so that's why he's got so many massive military fleets and choppers and planes and everything in his movies all over the show. And he just makes them look really, really good. You know, it's part of the game, isn't it? I was having an argument on the New Zealand Journalists Association page today, Shane, about Operation Mockingbird. You ever heard of Operation Mockingbird?
No, I haven't actually.
No, classified CIA operation to basically infiltrate and virtually seize control of the mainstream media in the United States. Got exposed in like 1975. Had been going on since 1950. Apparently, they were hook, line, and sinker into CBS and a whole bunch of other networks and whatnot. And one of the other people on the I was just asking because this was declassified and it was totally admitted and everything. I was just asking to the New Zealand journalist, have they heard of any similar allegations of intelligence agency infiltration of the New Zealand media? And all these people were just insulting me and like correcting my spelling and. It's like they did anything except try and answer the question.
Yeah. Although you'd hope that if it had been infiltrated, it would be to a better standard. But that's...
No, you that's wouldn't.
Well, I don't know if you'd hope, but...
Well, it's New Zealand, bro. I mean, look, the New Zealand Intelligence Agency approach to things is very different to other people. Like, they don't cover their tracks very well because there's a saying in New Zealand, and you usually hear this before some kind of accident happens. She'll be right.
Yeah. Well, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like... Bro, shouldn't we stand, like, a little bit further away so that maybe he doesn't, like, see us, so that we're following him down the street? No, she'll be right. Oh, my God, he's seen us!
should we delete these emails about Kim.com before he comes after us? No, we'll do it afterwards. That'll be fine.
I love the irony of the naming of government agencies, don't you? The intelligence agency. You know, I don't know. Every single government department for me feels like an irony. You know,
right?
And in fact, that's kind of one of my general rules of life. Is if the statement of intention comes from an official source, then you can assume that the direct opposite is actually the truth. You know, and secondly, if you can't make it in your own kitchen or whatever, then it's probably some kind of soft kill bioweapon, bro. You know, I mean, think about the health system. And this is another thing about suppressed technology. What about suppressed freaking health cures and stuff like that? It's unbelievable. How much do we not know because there's these establishment systems who just sit there, never justify their own existence, but demand that everybody else justify theirs as they kill you?
Right.
Freaking ridiculous. You never been arrested, have you, Shane?
No, I haven't.
Never?
Managed to avoid it so far, but we'll see how we go.
Well, you know, if you're over 25 now?
Yeah.
All right, you'll be sweet then, because they only really crack on the young kids for some reason. I was at uni and I was doing a research paper on cannabis, and I went up and asked a cop, hey, what do you look for when you look for cannabis users? And he goes, groups of males under 25.
Yeah.
You've got to be freaking kidding me. Is that not discrimination?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know? I mean, what if we said young Māori guys?
Yeah, I mean, youth are pretty much universally discriminated against by those in authority, as has been my experience.
Yeah. It is pretty nasty on that front, eh? I think it's because they know that older people have probably been roughed up by them before and don't want to be roughed up again, and so they learn things like their rights, for example, whereas all this fresh meat.
Yeah. I think there's a big cultural part of it too. You know, like every generation thinks the generation before them is basically old and gone, so you don't have to worry about them. And that the generation below them is aggressive and self-centered and all the rest of it, so they're fair game. And it's kind of, you know, that's about as old as human history, I think.
Yeah, apparently Plato was giving Socrates grief about him being a young upstart and whatnot. So, yeah, it has actually been going on for some time.
Yeah, so maybe we can try and ease up on that as a population. Might be good.
Yeah, it's like, bro, Why can't we just get along, you know? There should be some kind of cultural, I want to say attaché or something like this, you know, something attached to the culture that makes young people respect their elders and the elders foster and protect and care for the youngest, right?
Yeah.
I think what we've got is that entire system flipped around. The elders don't give a frick about the young people, and the young people don't respect the elders, probably because they don't give a frick about them.
Yeah, totally. Totally. It's a massive part of why there's so much shit in the world. I mean, you look at, well, just intergenerational conflict is just causes so much unnecessary bullshit.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. But I mean, at the point where we are with even my old mainstay of popular culture, it shouldn't be that hard to remember what it was like for you 20 years ago.
Yeah, I don't think it should be. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's a lack of empathy. And also, community's been completely split apart because more and more technology's been coming in to distract everybody from everybody else. And now you can't have a real conversation. You're actually texting on your smartphone while you're face-to-face with somebody else.
Yeah. I guess we've kind of developed into a culture of interruption, but that's just part of it, an accepted part of every interaction is that there's a potential for interruption of it, and that's just how it is, which isn't really good for anyone.
Especially not for coitus.
No.
Oh, sorry, honey. Sorry, honey. I got a text message.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
I think we've gone a little bit off the track we started there, but I think the point's still salient and valid that we were making.
Yeah. The point was definitely valid, if not erect. Now, if we are talking about this generation gap, we got technology into play. Now, the elderly, I think, have actually started to get on to hook with technology, particularly Facebook. Have you noticed how many elderly people have cottoned onto Facebook?
Yeah. I think that's probably where it is a bit more. That's the benefit. That's the counteract to the interruptions. Is that where perhaps the grandkids or whatever wouldn't really pay attention to what their grandparents were doing? It's just there for them.
Well, I mean, they like to see what we're up to and stuff, eh?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, what grandparent wouldn't want to know what their grandchildren are up to, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, and it's certainly an easier way of finding out than asking them sometimes.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, you're got to get them on the phone and all of this kind of stuff, organise a family barbecue and whatnot. Jeepers creepers, it's just getting out of control.
Well, just more that sometimes photographic evidence might be a little bit different to the story that you're told.
Oh, yeah, because and I love it how you put it in photographic evidence like it's a trial.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have Exhibit A. Here's you, slapped, smoking a joint at a party. What have you got to say for yourself? I'm sorry. I thought it was a ciggy. I was just trying to have a hoon on a geese, brave. You know, this kind of thing is actually something that amuses me because, ironically enough, all of my friends are nearly twice my age.
Okay.
Yeah, and have been for some time. And many people comment sometimes, probably not during this interview, but they sound a little like wise beyond my ears and whatnot. And it's because of that, I think, is because I've got so many acquaintances that I hang out with and listen to and get on with, who share all their experiences and knowledge and stuff with me. Knowledge that I haven't actually had to go out into this world and earn, mind you.
Mm.
So I don't think a lot of the lessons stick, but it still helps, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a pretty great resource. It's a human Wikipedia if you want to tie it into the
yeah.
conversation from before.
Yeah. Human Wikipedia. It reminds me of my old school chum Linus, and So he's just the man with obscure facts and stuff like that. You know, I'd like make a point, and I don't know what I actually had to back up the point. I just go, Linus, give me an obscure reference, and he'd do. That homeboy hooked me up, yo.
Yeah.
And what about your doco, bro? What's the name of it? You got a working title?
I was looking at doing a little series called Extraordinary New Zealand was the working title. And just doing, you know, a history of kind of, I guess, paranormal experiences in New Zealand. So there'd be an episode on UFOs, an episode on ghosts, that kind of thing. And just have a look at it purely from as a documentarian. So I'm going to discuss these things that have happened with these people, and they tell their story. I don't go in deciding what it is and what has happened before I talk to them, or after necessarily. But yeah, that was the aim of the series from the start.
To let people tell their story.
Basically, yeah, without judging either way. And I think that's probably the thing that most televised series about that kind of thing, that's where they fall over. It's either, oh, you saw a light in the sky. For an example, the narrative of the documentary, well, you saw a light in the sky, so that's definitely an alien from this planet that's doing this, when that might not even be the person's experience of what happened. Just to go on purely and see what their experience was. And, you know, the other half of the documentaries are taking the piss, basically. Haha, that could never have happened. What's wrong with you?
Well, what kind of things are jumped into that basket?
Just the assumption that either there has to be a presently understandable rational explanation, or that the person was mistaken, so you must have really seen this, or that the person has something, you know, like a mental health issue or something along those lines.
Oh, yeah. You're crazy, or you didn't see what you thought you saw, or I just don't believe you.
Yeah, basically. So I think both of those frames of mind when you're going in to talk to someone about something like this are unhealthy before they've even spoken to you. Give them the chance to explain what they saw and what their understanding of it is.
Yeah. Whatever happened to the benefit of the doubt, eh?
Yeah. I mean, we're pretty cynical world now. People do like to jump on stuff pretty heavily if it doesn't fit their worldview right at that point in time, whether it's a joke or whatever.
Have you noticed how on social networking things, YouTube comment sections, Facebook and whatnot, the normal restraint that we put upon ourselves when we're verbally, like face-to-face with somebody, isn't there anymore?
Oh, yeah, not at all.
In some people, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, YouTube commentary is basically a joke at this point. It's a punchline because it's expected to be this kind of awful out, poorly written, hateful, pointless trash, basically, on whatever the video might be. Kitten hanging out in a tree, you know?
Oh, yeah. It just feels... I saw a great T-shirt once, and it's got, like, all these zombies, you know, with their arms out. And it said, zombie apocalypse. You already think you're surrounded by mindless zombies. A zombie apocalypse would just give you something productive to do.
Yeah.
Now, expectantly, I mean, what's the outlook for New Zealand, do you reckon? Because there was an article that just came out today saying that we're in the same position Ireland was in before their Irish tiger economy became an Irish kitty, a wet kitty. And, and incidentally, do you know who was there and just left his Merrill Lynch back offices behind after putting all his money into blind trusts?
My good friend, Mr. Key.
You can't make this stuff up, bro.
Yeah. I mean, he's, for every person that gives him credit for how he's dealt with the financial situation, they should probably take a moment to realise that he's directly responsible for it on a personal level. I mean, all the meltdown, all the American subprime crap where they're trading money that doesn't exist, on people's houses that don't exist. You know, that was part. He was part of the infrastructure that set that up. So, yeah, probably a better way to have handled the situation would not be to not have caused it. Would be my take on the situation.
I love it how John King comes in and he goes, "Hi, everybody. I used to work in the financial industry, and I hear you've got a crisis, so I'm going to come in here and protect you from people like me."
Yeah, pretty much.
And people swallow it, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
Isn't it depressing? In fact, it just hit me just now how depressing that is.
Yeah, I mean, go back to the first time he was voted in, and just, you know, people voting, whether you think any other party is better or not, people voting on the basis for him that the other party has had their turn. I mean, the thought there is just mind-boggling that's your decision. Fair's fair. They've had a turn. We'll get someone else in. Let's not worry about what their policies are or who they are or what they've done. Doesn't matter.
What was it? Some people were actually talking about parenting, right? Mm-hmm. That you should actually get a license in order to be able to parent. You know, it happened after all these child abuse cases and stuff come out in the media. Mm. And I find it very interesting that they're willing to legislate that before legislating that people have to know what the frick they're doing before they vote.
Yeah. And I'm quite surprised about it, to be honest, because that's once you start messing with people's reproductive rights, that's when you do start getting uprisings. So that might not be in their best interest to do. It's, you know, kind of one of the three. Can people eat? Can people perceive themselves to be in some way at least a little bit free? And, you know, reproduction and eating are basically the two things that drive your body every day. And if you start messing with those too much, that's when you start to get problems with your population. So that's it's very ill thought out, but not surprising with this government.
Could you imagine, literally, the government cock block police? You know, you're about to get some. But in come those coppers with the cockers. You've got to be freaking kidding me. I mean, I'm making fun, right? Well, I can guarantee you this will start to happen in about 50 years. We're so freaking stupid. Hey, have you, what was it talking about? You know, all the security in the airports, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know how it's freaking stupid? And you know how they don't actually catch anybody who's dangerous with a bomb or anything like that anyway? And all they do is just waste everybody's time and waste their own freaking money because there's no actual terrorist threat. The United States government made it up as a manufactured freaking hoax so that they can invade countries with impudence and just stay there and ship heroin out, you know? Well, and so as a result, I have to get fingered if I go in there, you know. That just seems ridiculous. Now, here's the thing. People obey those stupid rules anyway, don't they? Here's the thing.
Yeah.
The stupider and crazier the rules you can get people to follow, it's a downward slope, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Yeah, and that's the biggest danger to anything, really. It's just a gentle nudge towards worse and worse circumstances, because if it's just a tiny little bit worse than yesterday, well, you know, that's just life. If you come in with a massive sweeping change, that's where people take note.
Yeah. David Icke called it the totalitarian tiptoe.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, John Key gave a speech to that effect. He was still talking to a business roundtable or something like that when the media were there. And what did he say? He said, "We're doing a whole lot of small things, and when you add all those small things up, it actually winds up being a lot." So let me get this straight, John. Is your plan to boil us very slowly in a pot like a frog? Yeah, pretty much. But I got a nice smile, don't I? Yes, you do, actually. I'm going to vote for that guy. I love his smile. You know? Yeah. I mean, sweet mercy. Did you know that something like 60% of respondents on a poll thought that John Key was sexy? Like the woman in this country, right? And I think that highlights the drinking problem that we've got in this country.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying. Pretty terrifying.
And it's just going to get worse and worse. So what have we got now, bro? We've got the GCSB bill, TICS bill, TPPA. We're part of NATO. Coast Guard's patrolling our waters. We're going to have aircraft carriers coming in, nuclear ships, and the whole G. We've got the deep sea oil. We've got the national parks being ripped up for mining. We've got the social services being cut. We've got the national debt and more debt than we've ever been before. We've got a reserve bank governor that's directly from the World Bank who specializes in privatizing entire countries and selling them out to foreigners at an exact same time with it when the reserve bank got given sweeping powers. Holy crap. Oh no.
And people don't necessarily vote based on who they think it'd be good to have a beer with.
Well, who would you vote for, really?
I'm still looking at polls. I'm feeling left, so it's going to be somewhere along there. I think that the Greens solar initiative are just pretty great. Pretty just in there, it's something, you know. It's a positive policy. I can't remember the last time I saw one of those.
Yeah. So I was talking with my one of my gay mates the other day, and I said to him, "Hey, bro, can you think of a piece of legislation that's been passed in like the last 20 or 30 years or something like that that gave people more rights?" And he's like gay marriage. That was about it.
Yeah.
Every single other law has taken rights away.
I did love John's response to that if that bill was to pass, then you'd be locked into one energy provider. Well, if the energy provider is the sun, that's probably all right by me, I reckon. I think most people would feel the same.
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty surefire way that the sun ain't going to run out, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like you have to, like, run up the hill and get the Jenny restarted or something like that. It's like, oh, bro, the lights went out. Can you restart the sun, man?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No. So yeah, we'll see what happens with the. I'm sure that all the parties will start to announce a few more policies over the next couple of months, and we'll see who's got the least worst, and they'll probably grab my vote.
Yeah, see, me personally, I'm going to vote for an agitator. You know, I don't know, Winston or Honoharawira or something like that. I don't really agree entirely with either of their policies, but they're the only two people who actually verbally abuse John Key and make fun of his cabinet members because they're just scum. It's fun. You know, like the time, what was it, Jerry Brownlee, the earthquake recovery minister. Ironically, they made the most obese National Party member the earthquake recovery minister. You can't make this stuff up. And and he was insulting Winston Peters kind of thing. And Winston said, "Look, I don't have to take that from an illiterate woodshop teacher." I was like, "Yeah, Winston, you got my vote." You know, based on that purely. You know, I'm a pretty astute politico.
Yeah. to be honest, if I didn't have to live in the country, I think it would be pretty amazing if Colin Craig won, just because it would be hilarious for about 3 days before the country was ruined. His first 3 days in office would be hilarious. As he realises that he doesn't really, can't really, like, pray away a deficit, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, I'm sure he didn't amass his enormous, real estate empire based on a hope and a prayer.
Well, no, but I mean...
But is this going to be like one of the Destiny Church kind of things? Or like, in fact, my Mrs. Sarah just... called me over one time. I think it was like last week or the week before or something. And apparently there's this church in Auckland, you know, where people give tithes and whatnot. And the pastor and his wife just sold their mansion for like $2.8 million or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you're doing the Lord's work, do you need three jacuzzis on the one property?
I think the whole thing should just be far more open. You go in, you get your comforting, your reassurance that everything's going to be okay, that it's going to be great after you die, and then you get an invoice and pay a fair fee.
Yeah.
Like any other business.
Yeah, exactly. What are you selling? Salvation. Okay. How much is it going to cost me? Your eternal soul. Really? Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose? If I have to give up my eternal soul in order to get salvation for my eternal soul? Isn't that kind of like circular reasoning, bro? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. I'm not making fun of religion. In fact, I've started to see the point in a lot of religious thinking. Strictly in survival strategy, actually. Because mm-hmm. Did you know that you're actually more likely to survive a traumatic event like being held in a POW camp or something like that, if you're a strong believer? Because when you're locked away without hope, you're not locked away without hope alone.
Mm.
And something occurred to me. Just the belief in a higher power. No evidence, nothing. Just belief in and of itself actually produces real, measurable benefit.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, even just in simple things like reducing stress, you've always got someone to blame. You've always got someone to call on for support no matter what your situation. The fact that you're doing that, if it works, it works. I mean, it doesn't mean there's anyone answering. It doesn't mean there isn't either. But the benefit of it and the reason for it is fairly obvious to anyone who looks at it for a little while.
Yeah. I think it's pretty straightforward. And in that case, it occurs to me that there's a bunch of discriminated peoples in New Zealand right now. In fact, around the world. Discriminated against group of people number one. All the old discriminated groups against are gone. Nobody discriminated against Muslims or Asians or people based on race anymore. No. That's all politically correct. You can't do that no more. But if you're a smoker, you're a freaking leper. Right? You get cast out with the rest of them. You know, no smoking, Izzy. They even have no smoking dance festivals, bro. No, seriously. 3 whole days people are supposed to go without a ciggy. It's unbelievable. And the second group of discriminated against people, Christians.
Right.
Anybody who's got faith. Oh, yeah. Those people just get the butt of everybody's jokes. And the other group of discriminated against people, conspiracy theorists. And I realise that in a large way, I'm a member of all three groups at times.
Right.
I'm like, what the hell is going on here? You know? Nobody's actually hurting anybody or doing anything wrong. And they're just getting shafted, being treated terribly. It's like it's like society's been moulded in a specific way. And because the powers that be don't want you to notice that it's being molded in a specific way, they throw up a whole bunch of pieces of meat, or rather, different social groups within the general order that they dominate, for you to get effed off at, so that you don't get effed off at the lying bankster scumbags that make money out of thin air, crash the global economy, and they get elected to try and save us from it.
Yep, pretty much. I mean, that's been going on forever as well. Let's find a group that either can't or isn't able to defend themselves, and let's use them as a scapegoat. That's been how it's been forever as well. You crusaders, you go off and we'll just get all the men of military age out of the country for a little while, and we'll just The royalty will just hang back here while you go off to a desert and die, basically. See you later.
Yeah. Don't you just love that?
Yeah.
I really starting to get a little bit over it, you know? It's like, as soon as the generation dies off, you know, like the First World War generation, I think there's like only one or two, a handful of World War One veterans left alive. As soon as that generation dies, all the first-hand knowledge from that generation dies with them, unless it's documented and recorded and whatnot. And most elderly people don't record their stories, do they? They don't have frickin' YouTube channels, do they?
No.
So, basically, life could be so messed up in a single generation, and nobody would even notice.
Yeah.
You go from freedom to tyranny in the blink of an eye, and people will just accept it when they get born, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the whole thing. If you don't know any different, then you don't know what else there can be.
Yeah. And I think maybe people have been taught to suppress even the possibility that something different might work.
Yeah, definitely. And it's kind of a big product of the last century. Has been a desperate need to shut down a competing system. You had, you know, the Red Scare and all that kind of crap going on, where neither country, well, in that particular instance, neither the US isn't a pure capitalist democracy by any stretch of the imagination, and Soviet Russia was about as communist as Antarctica is now. It's just, you know, just a word to latch on to the same situation in both countries. A small minority of people with a large amount of the wealth exploiting the rest.
Yeah. See, that's just what happens. And that's despotism, basically. I think that's a very definition of it, isn't it?
Yeah, effectively. And nothing's changed there in either country or in most other countries.
What would a new system even look like, though, Shane? You know, like, I know we're talking about, like, the possibilities and whatnot, but everybody's got these ideas, and nobody seems to really be solid. And even if they have got a solid idea, they don't seem to be able to implement them. It's like this, I don't know. It reminds me of a film called The Cabin in the Woods. Have you heard of this film?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
All right, so they're trying to escape the cabin in the woods, and he, like, tries to jump over a ravine or something. And little does he know, there's like this technologically advanced frickin' force field there that's invisible that he bounces up against and frickin' dies. All right?
Yeah.
That's what happens when you try to escape the system. There's an invisible force field that comes up and just frickin' nails you. You know, somebody asked me once, you know, Vinny, why don't any of these bad guys, why aren't they even afraid, you know, to get assassinated or something? And I go, it's simple. Only a good person would want to see him get assassinated, and there aren't too many good people who are assassins.
Yeah, basically. I mean, there's a whole bunch of human psychology that goes into it as well. Everyone's the hero of their own story. You know, people going off to fight wars, they think they're not going to fight for something that's bad, that they're doing it, so it must be good. The bad things that happen in war, they're going to happen to someone else, you know. Like after Saving Private Ryan debuted, the US military saw an increase in people signing up, which seems absurd, but every single person that watched it, they don't think they're the guy in the first scene wandering the beach looking for his arm. They're the people at the end that make it through because they're the hero of their own story in their own mind, and it's just the way people are built. And until kind of people maybe take a minute to start thinking about why they act the way they do, why they have these thoughts, why they have these reactions, things are just going to get worse. It's the same with people not wanting or caring what other people believe when it doesn't affect them. That's the fear of, if you've got a different way of living that works for you, then maybe I'm wrong. When the reaction should be, okay, that works for you, cool, let's see what works for me. And as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else, then it shouldn't really matter. It's just the way people are built, and people don't take a minute out of their day to think of why they're reacting to things the way they are. And it's half, you know, that's the other half of the problem with the system that we have, and why it's difficult to implement a new one, to find a new one, because we don't necessarily have to have a new system for everyone.
See, I personally, I'm in favour of limiting all of that kind of spectacularly.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, government's not a good thing, man. I was just thinking about this, you know. Statism, what was it? excuse me, I was a bit loud there. statism is the brilliant idea that you give certain people the ability to hurt you, kill you, and steal from you so that they can protect you from people who try to hurt you, kill you, or steal stuff off you.
Yeah.
It's just like, whoa. Whoa, yeah. That's it. It's actually true, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, tax is theft. The police kill, like, I don't know, nearly 1,400 people, I think, since the late 60s, I think. Mm-hmm. 1,400 people have been killed by police in the line of duty and stuff like that, and not one single cop has ever gone to jail for a murder. Even when the evidence is overwhelming. I mean, it just seems like a state protection racket, you know. I mean, if you think of the government as a gang, all right, a criminal mafia. If they were a mafia, it would be nicer, because when you pay them protection money, you actually get protected. But the outshot is, if you're actually being governed by a criminal syndicate, how exactly do you get yourself out from under their thumb? I mean, what happens in the movies? They have to kill the gangsters and all of that kind of stuff in order to get out from under them, because they never let you go. They never leave you alone. They hunt you to the ends of the earth and the ends of your days. How is this even possible? It's just, I'm sorry, I'm just rambling. I'm really, really intensely wondering about it.
I guess the only thing we can do individually that comes to mind for me is to work the opposite way, and it's to work through attrition and making things slightly more positive in whatever way you can every day. Again, sweeping change is what gets noticed, but a little bit of change every day can make things progress. So even if it's just, if someone's shitty to you, just not engaging them on a level of shittiness, just be fine, don't care, deal with them politely if they're shitty. Something that's tiny and almost pointless, but changes the way the interaction is done between that person and the next person. I guess that's all we can do, is try and find something small and positive to do every day, and hopefully that will gradually filter up, instead of having something negative and small happening every day filtering down.
Well, it's a long, slow process, you know, and you've got either the option to create something good or to prevent something bad, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
You know, yeah. Some nasty piece of legislation is being passed or something like that, you know, kick up a stink about it.
Yeah,
just absolutely. Don't do nothing. I think that's basically my favourite piece of advice to give to people. No matter what you do, just don't do nothing.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Getting sick of that BS. All right, well, we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is Shane Warbrook. And bear in mind, of course, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you support the idea of getting people's voices and stuff heard and talking about some interesting Shiite Muslim, then go to theveneyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. And there's a donate button there for the PayPal. You can do regular donations. Those are always very helpful, because all the money just basically goes to just paying the bills, you know, just surviving. And that's why I'm able to spend like 14, 16-hour days, you know, just exposing scumbaggery, recording stuff, editing, uploading, blah, 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 blah. Because I don't have to worry about if the bills are paid. And that's thanks to you, which means you don't have to worry about if somebody has really important ideas and stuff like that. You've got a place where they can vent them, all right? It's a public service, ladies and gentlemen. Service to the public. Public donates in order to keep the service alive. Pretty straightforward. Back in a minute.